The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Is WWTC Minneapolis St. Paul, FM 107.5, K298CO, Minneapolis, Intelligent Radio.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. President Trump hopes that a recovering economy will be able to help him win re-election in November.
The president claimed a major economic victory last week when new data showed a surge of 4.8 million new jobs last month. It was the best single-month job gain in history. However, because of the coronavirus lockdown this spring, U.S. unemployment remains high. Still, Mr. Trump says things are turning around.
Our economy is roaring back. It's coming back extremely strong.
Meanwhile, Democrat Joe Biden offered a darker take on the jobs report. He called it positive news, but said the country is still in a deep, deep job hole. Greg Clugston, Washington.
The president led 4th of July from the White House yesterday. He gave a speech the day before at Mount Rushmore, vowing to safeguard our values. This is SRN News.
This is Nick Anderson, General Manager of Salem Media Group Twin Cities. During times of crisis, this radio station will continue to be a reliable source of news and information. We take this very seriously and ask that you continue to stand behind not only our station by listening every day, but by continuing to do business with our local marketing partners. It's because of their support that we can be a beacon of strength when our culture needs it the most. Visit this station's website to learn more or call us at 651-405-8800.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
This is Dennis Prager for Mathnasium, the Math Learning Center. As you know, happiness is a moral obligation. But if you're a parent, that might seem impossible. If you're trying to teach your kids math, some would say choose one. You can't do both. If this is you, then Mathnasium has the solution. At Mathnasium, students learn to understand and master math. They learn number sense, math fluency, and problem-solving skills that equip them for success, not just in school, but for the rest of their lives. Mathnasium students become confident and even enjoy learning math with Mathnasium's customized and live one-on-one approach. Students can actually reach their potential, possibly even more than you might imagine. And now, with the added challenges due to COVID and school closings, more than ever, your child needs extra math support this summer to keep moving ahead. So do your kids and yourself a favor and enroll today at one of the Mathnasium centers listed on the Patriots advertiser page at am1280thepatriot.com. Mathnasium, changing lives and adding happiness through math.
Hi, this is Lee with the Kingdom Builders. So I have to be honest and let you know that sometimes I really do get nervous about our current situation. I know that I'm being taken care of, but sometimes I don't act like I know I'm being taken care of. I'm really not concerned about my health. I want to follow the protocol that is put before us. I want to honor those in authority over me. At the same time, I want to be a responsible and good steward of the resources that I've been given. Day-to-day activities might look a little bit different. We should continue steadfastly on the path that the Lord has given us. We're not called to worry. We're called to run a race of endurance. Remember, the world is watching. How we react to our situation could impact how people see our faith. So if you're interested in having a conversation about your roof or gutters or anything else, we encourage you to give us a call at 612-900-9166. Or look us up at thekingdombuilders.com. That's thekingdombuilders.com.
As the will of the students goes, so goes the will of the nation. This is the central theme of the new movie Return to the Hiding Place, a film about Corrie Ten Boom and her family's heroic efforts to hide and save Jews from the Nazis during World War II, and about her secret army of teenagers. Watch this captivating movie tonight with your older children at salemnow.com and save 20% with the promo code Minneapolis. Return to the Hiding Place at salemnow.com. Use promo code Minneapolis.
I appeal to you to fight. I fully recognize not everyone has a fighting nature, but everyone can help fighters. What's wrong is not to do either. If the troops have no supplies, the troops are worthless. This station is a fighter. So there's a very simple way for you to help this station, and that is just patronize their sponsors.
Help us continue to keep the Twin Cities right by supporting the local businesses you hear on this station.
AM 1280, The Patriot, and iHeartRadio. They go together like stars and stripes. Listen at iHeart.com or with the free iHeartRadio mobile app.
Whoa, look at all these options.
You can fill an entire warehouse with all the different ways you can stream The Patriot. Top shelf choices include AM1280ThePatriot.com, our free app, and Radio.com.
The views expressed on the following program do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time for the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. Here now is your host, Al Malmberg.
Thank you and good morning. Today we're going to speak with Barry Schiff, who has logged over 28,000 hours in 361 different types of aircraft. He's a best-selling, award-winning author, having written a dozen books and 1,800 magazine articles over a period of 57 years. Ernie Gann referred to Barry as America's flight instructor. He's also been inducted into several aviation halls of fame. And Barry, welcome to the World of Aviation.
Here.
It's great to have you on. When and where did your love of aviation begin?
Well, that's an interesting story. I was kind of a juvenile delinquent when I was 13 years old, and my parents decided to send me back east. I live in California, to visit my grandparents and get me away from the influence of some bad guys, I guess. And they sent me on a North American Airlines DC-4. I'd never been on an airplane before. And I got on this thing, and it whisked me off to Wichita and Chicago and New York. But on the way, it was rather strange. I kept looking out at the wings, and I knew that the wings lifted the airplane. But I couldn't figure out how. I mean, they didn't flap, they didn't move, they didn't do anything. They just silently and beautifully lifted the airplane. And these prehistoric monsters on the wings, these big engines and propellers making all this noise and spitting fire out the exhaust, it just intrigued the hell out of me. And when I got to my grandparents' hometown in New Jersey, I went to the library, checked out a book. Actually, I kept it because, as I told you, I was a juvenile delinquent. I still have that book, and it absolutely mesmerized me. It got me so intrigued that I decided I had to learn to fly.
I've got to ask you, what was the book?
It was called The Science of Pre-Flight Aeronautics. It was kind of a text. I don't know who the author was, but it's over across in my bookshelf right now.
You know, when you say you were a juvenile delinquent, it almost sounds to me you were a really sharp kid. Perhaps just a little bored and looking for a little adventure?
Well, I'm not sure why. Maybe I was bored, but it wasn't really bad delinquency, but it was it wasn't good.
So,
I mean, I didn't kill anybody or anything like that, but we played some horrible pranks. I mean, I don't need to describe them.
we won't go into that. So when was the first time that apparently your grandparents realized that suddenly there was something that had gotten your interest? When did you start flying then?
Well, when I at the end of the summer, after I left my grandparents and came back home to California, I told my parents I want to learn to fly. Of course, I got a lot of discouragement there. They were not at all interested or pleased in seeing their son climbing into a little airplane. So I just snuck out to Santa Monica Airport on my own, and I had to get a flight. I had to go up in a little airplane, so I went out on the taxiway with my bicycle and stuck my thumb out. I figured if you can hitchhike a ride in an automobile, well, you can do it in an airplane too, right? Well, after a few attempts, a guy actually did stop. His name was Ed Grant. He had a Bonanza. And I'll never forget, on the side of the Bonanza, he had painted a jigger of whiskey and a glass of beer, which I guess if you're a drinker represents a Boilermaker. And that was his business. He was a Boilermaker. And he took me up in the air, and I looked at the wings, now knowing what they actually did, because I had read the book, right? And it was a smug feeling knowing I knew why an airplane flew. But I had to learn. It wasn't enough to get a ride. And so I got a job at the airport without my parents' permission and converted the 75-cent an hour salary into flying lessons.
That's it. You know, I got to tell you, that's one of the best stories of how someone learned how to fly or got interested in aviation that we've had on this show. That's an incredible story, Barry. Did the Boilermaker, did he allow you to take the controls of the plane when you were up?
Actually, he did. In straight and level flight, I got to wiggle the wings a little bit. And it was a thrill.
I was going to say, you must have been just beside yourself doing this.
Oh. I was. I even knew to call them ailerons. How about that?
He must have been really impressed. Did you keep in touch with this guy by any chance?
Well, he was killed some years later in that same airplane. He, it was a sad accident. He had an engine fire, and it took
that's
him
horrible.
Down.
That's too bad, because I'm you know, you can imagine how proud he would have been of you.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I think of him all the time, though.
So what year is this that you were doing a barter agreement? You were working at the airport in exchange for flying time. What year would this have been?
Do I have to say? 1952.
Yes,
1952. I was 14 years old.
And what was the cost of renting an airplane an hour back then in 52?
Hey, it was expensive for a guy who only made 75 cents an hour. It cost $7 an hour for the airplane. Wow. That included fuel, because that only cost 35 cents a gallon. And the instructor was $4. So the total was $11 an hour.
Who was that first instructor?
A guy named Mike Walters. He wound up being an airline pilot eventually. I got to tell you a funny story. You know, I flew for TWA for most of my career, 34 years. Yeah. And on one flight, I was flying from LaGuardia to Oklahoma City. And, you know, we allowed other airline pilots to get on board our airplanes for free and ride in the cockpit. It was a courtesy.
Right.
One day on this flight to Oklahoma City, this guy comes in the cockpit and requests a ride on the jump seat to Oak City. And he introduces himself as Mike Walters. And I said, my God, the Mike Walters? He says, what do you mean? I said, you taught me to fly.
Wow.
And there he was, my instructor, sitting in my jump seat in a Boeing 727. It was great fun.
How difficult was it to keep to pay attention to what you were doing in the cockpit, wanting to catch up with this guy?
Well, not hard at all. I wanted to show off how well I could fly an airplane, because there were times when I was learning that he didn't think I'd ever make it.
So in 1952, how many hours did you have in the logbook before you soloed?
Well, I couldn't solo till I was 16. So I had, I think, 85 hours when I finally soloed.
So you were definitely ready.
I was. And then when I got my private pilot's license, you had to be 17. And I think I had 150 or 60 hours at that time. So I was ready in every case. But I tell you something, Al, I can't tell you how much I loved it. I loved being in the air. There was nothing like pushing the throttle forward and leaping into the sky, even if it was only
Barry, every time I go every time I go flying, I say, guess what we get to do? We get to go flying today.
Yeah, exactly right.
And
most people don't really
understand
that kind of passion.
No. Yeah, there's nothing better.
No.
Absolutely nothing better, in my opinion.
And you know what I love about it is when you get up in the air, whatever problems you may have had on the ground, you leave them behind. You don't even think about them. You can't think about them.
Yep.
You're consumed with what you're doing in the air. So it's a release. It's a relief valve from the pressures of ordinary flight. I can't tell you how much I love that.
It's very medicinal, is the way I put it.
Well, I accept that.
So did you go the normal track that that most pilots that want to continue and make it a career? Did you become a CFI and a CFI too, and go through that route, or how did you do it?
Yes, I was a flight instructor at 18, but I started an aviation publishing business when I was 21, and I kept flying and I kept instructing while I had that business, and the thought of being an airline pilot was foremost in my mind, but at that time the airlines were not hiring. But just fortuitously, when I sold my business in 63, the airlines began to hire, and I thought, wow, this is for me. And I applied to all four major airlines. I guess it was TWA, United, American, and Pan Am. And the first one to hire me was or accept my application was TWA. And that's how I chose that airline. I wasn't going to turn it down.
Barry, we're going to continue this conversation momentarily. Barry Schiff is our guest, and you're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
There are few things in life better than leaving the confines of old Mother Earth, putting the nose of your airplane on the center line, and going full throttle down the runway. You put a little back pressure on the stick, and the plane knows when to lift off. It's a feeling you can only get being a pilot. Al Momberg here for Thunderbird Aviation. You can experience this by taking a $99 discovery flight at Thunderbird. You'll go up with a certified flight instructor, and you will actually take the controls of the plane and fly it. You'll feel the exhilaration, excitement, and gratification that you've heard me talk about so many times over the years. Thunderbird Aviation is where I learned to fly, and they are simply the best. They have a variety of aircraft you can rent, and you can always be assured that they've been maintained to the highest of standards. The first step, though, is to take a discovery flight. Visit their website at thunderbirdaviation.com. Thunderbird Aviation, located at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. To learn more about the discovery flight, go to thunderbirdaviation.com.
How'd you like to eliminate your expensive cable bill forever or get new satellite internet where cable can't go? Well, now you can have affordable satellite internet service for a few dollars a day. All you need is a mini satellite installed, and you can have unlimited internet connections wirelessly in your home or office. And no cable boxes means unlimited connections and no clutter. You can surf the internet or stream any of your favorite television services with no cable. And the best part is, satellite internet service costs only a few dollars a day for your entire home. Yes, fast internet to surf or stream television for a few bucks a day. Call now for free details and learn how to drop your expensive cable bill.
800-430-8761. 800-430-8761. 800-430-8761. That's 800-430-8761.
Academy College of Aviation has made a seamless transition to online and streaming courses that can be completed from the comfort of your home. If you're looking to take your aviation career to the next level or wish to make a career change, Academy College of Aviation is the place to be. Over the next two decades, the aviation industry is going to need 637,000 new commercial pilots. 87 new pilots will need to be trained each and every day. That's one every 15 minutes. Academy College of Aviation is one of the most respected aviation colleges in the country. Get going on your degree today by enrolling in one of Academy's courses, including aircraft dispatch, information technology, or business programs. This includes new and advanced concentrations of aviation management, human resource management, project management, cloud computing, and cybersecurity. Academy College's new programs will provide you with the skills necessary to succeed from day one on the job. Academy College, located at the crossroads of 35W and 494 in Bloomington. Visit their website at academycollege.edu. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Barry Schiff is our guest.
Barry, you jump in with TWA in 1964, and over the years you flew everything from the Connie to the 747, flying a lot of different type aircraft with the airline. And I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but of all the planes that you flew at TWA, which one did you enjoy flying the most?
Oh, the Lockheed 1011. No comparison. It was a gentleman's airplane, easy to fly, great performance. And it was the first airplane that really had a good autoland system in it. So you could fly into Paris or London on a foggy day and not be concerned about how poor the visibility was. It was great.
Tell us about that early autoland system.
We
compare those things to the GPS and approach charts that we have today. What was it like with the early systems?
Well, it was great because Lockheed developed the Autoland system in coordination with Collins. I forget who else, but it was basically the same type of Autoland system developed for the space shuttle. And it was just a marvelous system. It was triple redundancy so that if anything went wrong during the approach, it would kick out the bad part, keep the other two, and let you keep on going. But you could land in visibility as low as, what was it, just a few hundred feet. Wow. In fact, when you made the landing, you'd look out the window. You knew we were just a few feet above the ground because of the radio altimeter. And as the nose came up and you flared for a landing, you could feel the landing gear touch the runway. You couldn't see anything forward because the nose was still too high during the flare. And as the nose came down, then you started to see a couple of little centerline runway lights ahead of you. And then you really knew you were on the ground. And it steered itself down the runway. It was fantastic. All you had to do was apply the brakes and apply the reverse thrust. And the system was fully capable of landing in absolutely zero conditions. The problem was, if you landed under those conditions, you wouldn't be able to taxi and find the gate.
Makes it a tad difficult. What was the least enjoyable plane you flew with the airline?
Oh, I can't think of anything that's least enjoyable. I loved them all. I checked out as a captain on the 727, so obviously I loved that because my first experience as a captain. And then I flew the 707. Which was such a classically wonderful airplane, historic in every way. I loved that. I loved them all. There wasn't one airplane that I flew for TWA that I didn't like. I got to fly the Connie, as you mentioned earlier, and that was an incredible airplane, one of the most beautiful airplanes I've ever flown.
You not only did you fly for TWA, you retired in 1998 after 34 years. But you've also, in aviation, we talk about the 361 types of aircraft that you've flown. You flew a replica of the Spirit of St. Louis. And I've got to ask you, there's no forward visibility. What was it like to fly an aircraft such as that?
Well, it's not bad not being able to look out the front window because there was none. You could look out the side okay, and even for the takeoff and landing, it's not bad. There's just a technique you have to use so you can see where you're going. But the thrill of flying that airplane, because it was a difficult airplane to fly, it was unstable, it didn't want to do what you wanted it to do. It was built to go long distance. It wasn't built to be a comfortable cross-country airplane. What made it so incredibly wonderful to fly the airplane is making me begin to appreciate how difficult it was for Lindbergh to have flown that airplane from New York to Paris nonstop and alone. I can't imagine having done that. It was just such a challenge. And the fact that he did it is a tribute to what he did.
Yeah. Now, did the Spirit of St. Louis, did it truly have a periscope that went up that you could look through to see forward?
Yes, but he didn't use it, and nor did I. It wasn't very practical.
Now, I've got a question, but having lived in California, and one of the great aviators, in my opinion, ever, was Jimmy Stewart.
Oh,
did you ever
great,
run into him?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, Yeah, I was a line boy at Santa Monica Airport at a place called Bell Air Service. This is when I was learning to fly. And my job there was, you know, pulling airplanes in and out of a hangar. Well, one of the two replicas built for the movie was kept at Bell Air Service where I worked. And I had the thrilling job of taking that airplane and taxiing it out once a week and running the engine. I'll tell you something. That was a thrill. And Stuart came out to the airport a number of times. He had a couple of airplanes there. He had a fully IFR-equipped Piper Cub. He had a Cessna 310, one of the originals, and he also owned a P-51. So the guy had a few airplanes, and he was an enthusiast, and he was a great guy. I have a picture of him and I standing in front of the Spirit replica.
Wow.
One of my favorites.
We had on the show a year or two back a gentleman author by the name of Roger Mattson, who wrote just a fabulous book, The War in Jimmy Stewart and the War in Europe. And it's a fabulous book of how he tried to enlist in the Army Air Corps. And they looked at this guy and they said, well, you're in ill health. I mean, he was so tall and lanky.
Yeah.
He saw the war coming, and he got his pilot's license, and even got other people involved in learning how to fly. And
yes, he
retired
did.
Retired as what was it? Was he a brigadier general when he finally retired?
Yes, sir. One star general. Correct.
He was
an incredible pilot. He flew some of the early bombers for the Air Force.
Yeah. Yep.
He was quite remarkable guy, and just a nice guy too.
Yeah,
he was as nice in person as he appears to be in the movies.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, that to become a brigadier general, he needed another mission, and he actually flew a mission during the Vietnam War. I think it was in a B-52.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
Yeah, amazing guy. Now, you also been up in the P-51D Mustang, B-29, B-52 Stratofortress. I've never talked to a civilian that's been up in one of these, but you went up in a U-2, 75,000 feet. Barry?
I got a couple of hours of dual instruction. Al, I've been very, very fortunate. You don't just walk up to the Air Force and say, I'd like to fly a U-2. If you're a writer and you've had somewhat of a reputation, they like the publicity that a writer can provide if it's done well. And they had the confidence that I would write a decent article about it, so they said, okay, we'll give you some dual instruction and take you up on a high flight. And I got to fly the airplane, and that was a great thrill. It was an epiphany. I mean, you know, you're up there at 75,000 feet. You don't really think about this, but you're looking down, and you see the contrails of jetliners below you, way below you. It's something else.
Yeah.
In fact, my instructor said, Barry, he said, you're the highest pilot in the world. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the cockpit in which I sat was above the other cockpit. So there was no one in the world that was at a higher altitude than I was on that day. And he knew that because he checked to see that there were no other U-2s or SR-71s flying that day.
How many Blackbirds did the Air Force have at that time?
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers were. Not a lot. I mean, they didn't need a lot.
Yeah.
I
suppose a handful at most, I would think.
I would think so, too. Probably, I would guess a couple of dozen, but I really don't know.
Did you notice when the plane was on the ground, the leaking of all the various liquids?
On the SR-71?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. In fact, that was the only way they could build the airplane. It had had built-in leaks because the airplane got so hot at altitude because of its speed and the compression of the air and the friction that at that point the airplane would expand and the tanks would then seal themselves because of the expansion. But on the ground, when the airplane cooled off, it leaked like a sieve. In fact, fact, what's really interesting is, you know, they put decals on the airplane that says U.S. Air Force, things like that. The airplane would go so fast in cruise flight that it would burn off the decals.
Wow.
And so they'd always have to replace them. Yeah, and the good news, though, is that if you had bird poop on the airplane, it burns it off in flight.
You never have to wash the plane.
No, you don't. You just go fast and the bird poop is gone.
Barry, we are going to take a break. We'll come back. You're the holder of 5 world aviation records, and we're going to get into that. Barry Schiff is our guest, and you are listening to the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington, right there at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is the World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
There are few things in life better than leaving the confines of old Mother Earth, putting the nose of your airplane on the center line, and going full throttle down the runway. You put a little back pressure on the stick, and the plane knows when to lift off. It's a feeling you can only get being a pilot. Al Malmberg here for Thunderbird Aviation. You can experience this by taking a $99 discovery flight at Thunderbird. You'll go up with a certified flight instructor, and you will actually take the controls of the plane and fly it. You'll feel the exhilaration, excitement, and gratification that you've heard me talk about so many times over the years. Thunderbird Aviation is where I learned to fly, and they are simply the best. They have a variety of aircraft you can rent, and you can always be assured that they've been maintained to the highest of standards. The first step, though, is to take a discovery flight. Visit their website at thunderbirdaviation.com. Thunderbird Aviation, located at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. To learn more about the discovery flight, go to thunderbirdaviation.com.
Limitless access to intelligent talk. Stream AM 1280 The Patriot with our free app, your smart speaker, or with iHeart, TuneIn, and radio.com. We live in the Twin Cities, but serve worldwide.
At TwinCitiesTuitions.com, we recognize that this school year was a little different for you, with families learning how to work and learn from home together. We also recognize that this won't last forever. As you look ahead to the fall and a new chapter in your child's education, TwinCitiesTuitions.com will proudly be here to help, with 50% off your students' first year at a brand new school. To see a full list of our partnering schools or for more information, visit TwinCitiesTuitions.com.
Millions open a My Social Security account so they can prepare for retirement. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov. Produced at U.S.
taxpayer expense. Academy College of Aviation has made a seamless transition to online and streaming courses that can be completed from the comfort of your home. If you're looking to take your aviation career to the next level or wish to make a career change, Academy College of Aviation is the place to be. Over the next 2 decades, the aviation industry is going to need 637,000 new commercial pilots. 87 new pilots will need to be trained each and every day. That's one every 15 minutes. Academy College of Aviation is one of the most respected aviation colleges in the country. Get going on your degree today by enrolling in one of Academy's courses, including aircraft dispatch, information technology, or business programs. This includes new and advanced concentrations of aviation management, human resource management, project management, cloud computing, and cybersecurity. Academy College's new programs will provide you with the skills necessary to succeed from day one on the job. Academy College, located at the crossroads of 35W and 494, or in Bloomington. Visit their website at academycollege.edu. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Barry Schiff is our guest. Ernie Gann, legendary pilot, referred to Barry as America's flight instructor. Barry, you are the holder of 5 world aviation records. Let's go through these, because this is fun. You set the speed record around a 500-kilometer closed circuit course. This was in January of 1975. What were you flying?
That was, I believe, a CI Marchetti SF-260, a little Italian airplane. Or was it the Aerostar?
Aerostar. Yeah, Aerostar.
The Aerostar. Okay, well, that was a fun one. That airplane was advertised before we set the record as a world's fastest general aviation airplane. And when I saw that airplane being advertised that way, I thought, wait a minute, what's the world speed record for small airplanes? And I went into the books and found out that it was held by the Soviet Union in a Yak-2, I believe. And so I thought, wow, maybe this thing would be a great airplane to use to break the Soviet record. I'd love to bring that back to the United States. Got a hold of the manufacturer, Ted Smith, and he said, sure, go ahead. It'll beat that Soviet record, the Ruski record, he called it. And so we used it to actually go ahead and break the Soviet record, brought it back to the United States.
So when you're talking a speed record, 500 kilometers, what does that equal in how many miles?
Oh, roughly 300 miles.
300 miles. So how fast did you run that course? What was the Russian record, and what is the new record?
The Russian record was, I think, about 294, 295, something like that. And I believe set the record was 312, if I'm not mistaken. Hmm. And the airplane could actually go faster than that, but when you fly around a circle, a pylon, and fly a circular course, you're not going to go as fast as if you were flying straight and level without turning. You lose a little bit in the turns. So the airplane actually went about 325 miles an hour, and it was quite a thrill. This was surprised me. After I set the record, I got a letter from the Soviet Air Force congratulating us on having set that record, broken their record. I never expected that. It's amazing. This envelope comes to the mail with all these Russian stamps, you know, these flowery, huge stamps. And what the hell is this? And it was a letter of congratulations from the Ruskis. I loved it.
I thought maybe you thought it was a draft notice for you to go into the Russian Air Force.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Okay, and then you talked about the Marchetti. That was the speed around a 100-kilometer close circuit course, and that was
correct.
In 69. So what do you recall what the old record was and what your new record is?
I believe that record was held by France, and I forget what the numbers were. You're going back way too far on me. I don't recall the numbers. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The French record, that's for sure.
If you would have known, I would have bowed totally to your greatness.
No, you would have been disappointed. I'm just an ordinary guy. I just happen to be an ordinary guy who loves to fly.
Oh, yeah. 1978, time to climb to 6,000 meters. You did it in a Cessna Turbo 310R. Okay, so
yeah.
6,000 meters is equal to how many feet?
Oh, roughly 20,000 feet.
So how long did it take you to...
3 feet per meter.
So what was the time to climb?
I don't recall, Al. I don't remember. But it was shorter than it had been. How about that?
Did you have the best angle of attack?
Well, we climbed at the best rate of climb speed, that's for
sure. There you go.
But this airplane was quite a remarkable climber. It was the Cessna 310 when it came out with turbocharged engines. The 310 before it had those engines was fast enough. This thing was a really hauler. It went up fast. And, of course, to help set the record, you have to make the airplane as light as possible because the lighter the airplane, the better it'll climb. So we took out all the seats, took out everything we didn't need, and it was a light airplane.
I've got to ask you, when you set these records, were you in the aircraft by yourself, or did you have a co-pilot?
No, I was by myself.
You are by yourself. Okay, then we've got speed over a recognized course. Recognized by who?
I'm recognized by the FAI. I love to say the name of this organization. They are the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale. That is the international federation that homologates or approves and maintains track of all world aviation records, whether it's in a balloon or a glider or an airplane or a model airplane. I mean, there are some rather impressive records out there. And they have to homologate or guarantee you actually did that. So when you fly a route or a circular course or whatever, they have a representative there. You have to declare you're going to do this in advance, and they send a representative there to observe and time you and make sure you're doing it according to the rules of the Federation. And it's a big deal. You just don't go out and fly and say, oh, I broke a record today. It has to be approved.
Can you describe?
Then you get this fancy certificate to hang on your wall. That's the best part of it.
Now, describe to us what the course was like.
I held several of them on a recognized course. That simply means the fastest time between two known cities. And they can be any two cities in the world, as long as they're a minimum distance apart. I forget what that distance is. But, for example, I have a world speed record from Los Angeles to Honolulu in a Lockheed 1011. But the only reason I got that record is because there wasn't one previously. So I simply said, well, I'm just going to tootle off on my regular flight, have a timer check my flight, and what do you know, I got a world speed record out of it. It's not a big deal to get a world speed record between on a recognized course. It's any two cities recognized by the FAI. And if there's no existing record at the time, you got the record. You can walk it and get the record. So it's not a big deal.
Oh, that's funny. Now, you've got four national records, commercial air routes, Wichita to Amarillo.
Yeah.
How long did it take you?
I don't know. I don't know. But I can tell you something really interesting about that flight. I knew that it was going to be a short flight because of the winds, and there was no existing record on that Amarillo to Wichita leg, so I decided I'm going to set the record. But unbeknownst to me, we had a really interesting passenger on that flight. A guy named John Wayne walks onto the airplane. He sticks his head in the cockpit, and he says, howdy. And I said, howdy back. And this man, he's just like he was in the movies. Big, bold. Just an incredible guy. And I said, this is a short flight. You want to sit in the cockpit? And he says, I'd love to. So he sat down in the cockpit. There was barely enough room for this guy. He's a big fellow. We strapped him in, and then we took off on this world record flight from Amarillo to Wichita. So he was a part of that.
Now, that short hop, approximately how long did it take you?
Oh, I don't know, an hour or something like that.
Wow.
I don't recall. You're going way back into ancient history. This was in the early 70s or something? I don't know.
Yeah, back in the era when you could actually invite somebody into the cockpit if you wanted to.
Yeah, and when I could remember things.
Oh, that's funny. So in that hour flight, you had the opportunity to talk to the Duke quite a bit?
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, we were so concentrated on getting there as quickly as we could and working with ATC to get a straight-in approach and all of that, that we didn't have a lot of time to chat with him.
Oh, man.
I mean, it was a world record flight, right?
You were busy. Out of curiosity, all the magazine articles that you've written, and by the way, every month I read your articles because it's always fascinating. But did you ever write an article on John Wayne joining you in the cockpit?
Well, I've mentioned him a few times, in a couple of articles I've written, you bet, over the years. But I didn't get to know him very well. I would love to have had a conversation, love to have had a cup of coffee with him, or I guess a beer, I guess. But
there you go. Yeah,
he was just a remarkable guy, just exactly like you see him in the movies.
Yeah, I interviewed a I'm trying to remember the author's name. This is probably 15, 20 years ago. A great book written about John Wayne and his best friend. He had a huge ranch. I mean, we're talking thousands upon thousands of acres in Arizona. And his best friend in life was the foreman of that ranch.
Really?
And that tells you a lot about John Wayne's character. It really does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot about him that makes you admire the man.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You flew a 727 Los Angeles to Kansas City, and you set that record.
Yes.
And I'm not going to ask you how long it took or how fast you were going, but is there anything that you do remember about it?
What I do remember about that was that apparently word had gotten out that we were setting this record from L.A. to Kansas City, and somehow the mayor of Kansas City got wind of it while we were en route.
Wow.
And so after we landed, the press was there. There were newspaper articles about our having set this record, and we got keys to the city. I still have a key to Kansas City.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Albuquerque to Chicago. I would think that you'd be leaving Chicago to go to Albuquerque, which would explain the speed when you... Never mind. The murder rate in Chicago.
I'd leave there as quickly as I could, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Although in those days, they weren't killing each other.
Yeah, that's true. What year would that have been?
Started later.
What year would that have been, Albuquerque to Chicago?
I don't know, back in the 70s or something. I'm not sure.
And then Phoenix to Amarillo in another 727.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was another one of those routes where there was no speed record. So we decided, let's get it. And, I mean, we could have taxied there and gotten the record because there was no existing record to break.
Amazing. Barry, we are going to take a break. We're going to come back and speak more with Barry Schiff, who is... in his own right, a legend in aviation. And you're listening to The World of Aviation, brought to you by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington, located at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
There are few things in life better than leaving the confines of old Mother Earth, putting the nose of your airplane on the center line, and going full throttle down the runway. You put a little back pressure on the stick, and the plane knows when to lift off. It's a feeling you can only get being a pilot. Al Momberg here for Thunderbird Aviation. You can experience this by taking a $99 discovery flight at Thunderbird. You'll go up with a certified flight instructor, and you will actually take the controls of the plane and fly it. You'll feel the exhilaration, excitement, and gratification that you've heard me talk about so many times over the years. Thunderbird Aviation is where I learned to fly, and they are simply the best. They have a variety of aircraft you can rent, and you can always be assured that they've been maintained to the highest of standards. The first step, though, is to take a discovery flight. Visit their website at thunderbirdaviation.com. Thunderbird Aviation, located at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. To learn more about the discovery flight, go to ThunderbirdAviation.com.
Do you have insurance on your savings, just like you have it on your home and your car? Online Trading Academy teaches you the skills to protect your nest egg. In our free investing class, you will learn strategies to use your money to make money, create income, and to protect what is yours. Attend a free investing class near you. Call now, 952-814-4410, or go to learnwithota.com. Again, that's learnwithota.com.
How do you define strength? Is it physical? Or is it mental? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's whatever empowers a person to dig deeper, fight harder, and overcome obstacles that once seemed insurmountable. Discover how much stronger and more confident your children can be. Encourage them to participate in a sport when they go to high school.
This message presented by the Minnesota State High School League and the Minnesota Interscholastic Activities Administrators Association.
Academy College of Aviation has made a seamless transition to online and streaming courses that can be completed from the comfort of your home. If you're looking to take your aviation career to the next level or wish to make a career change, Academy College of Aviation is the place to be. Over the next two decades, the aviation industry is going to need 637,000 new commercial pilots. 87 new pilots will need to be trained each and every day. That's one every 15 minutes. Academy College of Aviation is one of the most respected aviation colleges in the country. Get going going on your degree today by enrolling in one of Academy's courses, including aircraft dispatch, information technology, or business programs. This includes new and advanced concentrations of aviation management, human resource management, project management, cloud computing, and cybersecurity. Academy College's new programs will provide you with the skills necessary to succeed from day one on the job. Academy College, located at the crossroads of 35W and 494 in Bloomington. Visit their website at academycollege.edu. You're listening to The World of Aviation. We're speaking with Barry Schiff. Barry, you've written more than 1,800 magazine articles regarding flight safety, operational procedures and techniques, aeronautical theory, and many of these have been translated into other languages. Any idea how many languages they have been translated into?
As far as I know, 19, but it could be more. I don't know.
That is amazing. When you started flying, did you ever in your wildest imagination think that you would do what you have accomplished in your career in aviation?
No. Are you kidding me? A kid who was a juvenile delinquent learning to fly in a little putt-putt, I didn't think I'd get anywhere. If I didn't wind up in jail first. No, I didn't. But I'll tell you though, I owe it all to one thing, and that was a love of flying and determination. If you have those things, I don't think there's a limit to what you can do in flying.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just
agree.
Like that. By the way, I heard you talk about this $99 Discovery flight, which, God, yes. I recommend that to anybody who wants to get a sense of what it's like to fly. But I just have to comment that I remember when they were $5.
Now, I've got to tell you something. Jason Stormer, our producer of this show on Sunday mornings, and you spoke with him when he gave you a call.
Right.
He took a Discovery flight a week ago and absolutely had the time of his life. And the smile has not left his face, Barry, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, God, do I ever.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the thing I envy about new pilots is they get to experience the thrill that I experienced when I started flying, but it's been a long time since I've had that kind of feeling. There's nothing like your first flight. The only thing to beat it is your first solo flight. Now that is a thrill.
Everybody remembers it, and I'm going to ask you, I asked so many guests this question. What do you remember about your first solo?
Well, that I did it without my parents' permission. I have to tell you that my parents were totally opposed to my learning to fly. They wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer or some kind of other profession. Wow. In fact, it wasn't until I got a job with TWA as a pilot and that they began to get free passes that they finally approved of my profession.
Now,
that's all it took,
funny.
Free passes.
how long were you able to have your parents with you, and how much of this incredible success that you've had did they see?
Well, I would say a majority of it. My dad died around the turn of the century, only about 20 years ago, and mom just a couple of years before that. So they saw most of it.
Were you able to take them up in any of the general aviation aircraft that you flew?
Yeah, I took my mom up in a little Aronca Champion, which is a little putt-putt. And she finally agreed to go with me for a flight, and it took a lot of doing. But the one thing I'll never forget was I took off. We're climbing out over Santa Monica Airport, and I started to make a left turn to leave the traffic pattern. And I heard this screech from the back seat yelling, "Don't tilt the airplane! Don't tilt the airplane!"
Oh, that's funny.
What I remember about that flight.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah.
Generally, you take people up on a nice, calm Sunday morning, clear blue sky, no wind. Besides the tilting of the airplane, did you do some aerobatics with your mother?
No, not with my parents. Are you kidding me? I don't think I ever bank more than 20 degrees. Now, that was the only flight in which my mom went with me. My dad went on a number of flights, but not my mother. It was all she could do to take that first flight.
You know, she was a very brave individual, and it sounds to me like she did it for you.
Of course she did. I mean, how many mothers are going to go up with their 17-year-old kid? I mean, especially one that's been so irresponsible all of his juvenile life. But I gave her great credit for that.
Did they see how it changed how it changed you, aviation?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, sure. It gave me direction and purpose.
Yep.
And I'll tell you one thing. In my lifetime, if I could change anything, it would be nothing.
Wow. How many people can say that?
I don't know, but I am absolutely thrilled with what I've done with my life, and the joy that I've gotten out of flying airplanes is just nothing like that.
Yeah. What advice do you have to those, like Jason, who are thinking about going into aviation, that are thinking about getting a pilot's license, for a guy that's been around doing what you have done for so long? What advice do you have?
Well, I don't have any advice other than do it. Don't think about it. Do it. Because the more you do it, the greater the thrills will become. I mean, to see the sunsets from the air, to see the clouds from the air, go play with those clouds up there, and you get into a third dimension that most people can't possibly conceive or imagine. Looking down on the earth, it's so clean. It's so beautiful. There's nothing like it. It opens up a world to you, literally and really. You have to do it.
I couldn't agree with you more. Barry, are you still flying today?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Until as long as I'm able to outrun the setting sun, I fly.
What are you flying these days?
My son and I own a Citabria with a 180 horsepower engine, and we just love that thing. It's a great little airplane.
And
also some of the airplanes that I write about. Not long ago, I flew a Curtiss P-40 Kitty Hawk. That was a great thrill. Anything I can get my hands on, if it gets up in the air, I got to fly it.
What was it like to fly that P-40?
Well, it's a piece of history. And when I fly airplanes that are historical in that way, I like to attempt to put myself in the position of those who made the airplane famous. And in this case, of course, it would be the Flying Tigers and what they did, the volunteer group that went to China to help fight the Japanese. And the history of that airplane was so remarkable. And I like to think about the history. I like to try to imagine what it was like in that day.
Yeah. It's really amazing, isn't it? Now, we had mentioned earlier you flew up in a P-51D. The difference between the P-40 and the P-51D, what did you discover as far as the characteristics of the plane?
Well, the P-51, I think, was an easier airplane to fly. It had greater high-altitude performance. The P-40 had better low-altitude performance. But the P-51 had wider landing gear, which made it a lot easier to take off and land. The P-40 has narrower gear, kind of like the Spitfire. And it takes a little more attentiveness to make a decent landing in that airplane. It's a bit more challenging than the 51. But I prefer the 51.
Well, yeah. Type tail dragger did you learn to fly tail draggers in?
Well, that's the airplane I learned to fly in was an Aranca Champion, a 1946 Champion, N81881. And you know that airplane is still flying. It's owned by a fellow named Jim Bothorff up in Livermore, California. And every once in a while I go up there and he lets me fly it. I kind of like to go full circle with that airplane. It was the first airplane I flew, and sometimes it's the last.
Barry, we are out of time. I thank you so much for joining us this morning on The World of Aviation. You've just been fantastic.
I enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Al, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Barry. That's Barry Schiff, and you've been listening to The World of Aviation. Brought to you by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington. and by Thunderbird Aviation with locations at Flying Cloud Airport at Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is the World of Aviation.
Look at all these options.
You can fill an entire warehouse with all the different ways you can stream The Patriot. Top shelf choices include AM1280ThePatriot.com, our free app, and Radio.com.
Join Gene Sullivan each week on Where You Live, where he takes on... Gene, who do you take on anyway?
Maniacal landlords, slippery renters, overbearing HOA boards, demanding homeowners. Oh, and the legislative lunacy brought on by local politicians wanting to fix everything for us.
It's a common sense perspective on the news and stories that affect you the most, right where you live. Join Gene Sullivan every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on AM 1280, The Patriot.
AM 1280, The Patriot, and iHeartRadio. They go together like the U.S. and liberty. Listen at iHeart.com or with the free iHeartRadio mobile app. AM 12.